You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. In Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, Sean is enjoying his life of simplicity in San Francisco. However, when a group of hired assassins attempt to attack him and his friend Katie, Sean must re-enter a world that he has left behind in an attempt to stop an old foe from destroying the world. This week, Jason Tai and Daniel Collins stop by to talk about celebrating culture, breaking free from our parents' legacy, and owning who we are. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Hey, everybody, and welcome to Screenfish Radio. I am so glad that you could join us this week as we are talking about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, the latest entry into the Marvel canon, the latest film entry into the Marvel canon, I should say. And we're really excited to talk about this one with you. This week, I'm thrilled to have two of our regulars now, I guess. Jason Tai and Daniel Collins of Teen Fish. Welcome. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings tells the story of Shang-Chi, played by Simu Liu, who is a martial arts master, but who has been living in anonymity in San Francisco for the last 10 years. When a team of assassins attempts to capture him and a friend of his, he is thrust back into his old life to defeat his father and the past that he thought he left behind as he confronts the mysterious Ten Rings organization. The film stars Simu Liu, Awkwafina, Tony Leung, and Fala Chen. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers. But guys, I would love to know, what did you think of Shang-Chi?
I thought it was really good. It didn't feel like a Marvel movie for most of it, which I think worked in its favor. Same structure a lot of ways. But I also did like, the diversity inclusion they had. It was like a celebration of Asian culture, like the fighting, the creatures, the backgrounds, them talking Chinese, everything about it. They're trying to do what they did with Black Panther. And I think it worked. I liked it overall. It's more world building, and the fights were good. Yeah.
He's got moves.
Yeah.
I knew Simu from Kim's Convenience. I mean, he's got moves. I know they've got stunt coordinators, all this training and stuff, but I was really impressed with the fight choreography. I was really impressed myself.
It was really good.
JT, you mentioned about Black Panther. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Can you tell me what was it about that? Why did you make that comparison?
Just because that was like really big for that time. Like, it's Marvel has usually had white male actors as their leads, and also. When Black Panther came out, it was like really big of them because they were a huge studio and they've always had white male actors. And in Hollywood in general, casting someone who isn't that in an action movie is rare. And then when Black Panther came out, it was a lot of, they got a lot of people who were black, knew the culture, a lot of African culture. And worked on everything about it, even like the wardrobe and even like them making a Wakandian accent. Like they actually like looked at the geography of Wakanda and like, oh, this is what it would probably sound like. And like all these languages, it's like, it's not like a bunch of white people or like I guess, a bunch of white people making stuff up and like, okay, this is how we're going to run it. It's actual, you know, inclusion and diversity and bringing the culture together. And then this is mainly Chinese, but Asians in this movie and bringing their culture as well. Also, this is kind of crazy, but with this movie, Black Widow, Captain Marvel, and Black Panther, all of which do not have white males leading it. I don't know if you know this, they all got terrible, terrible reviews before the movie even came out by fans. So this is like, I don't know, it really says something about, like, I guess, you know, the audience, right?
Daniel, what did you think of the film?
Well, I'm going to be honest, I didn't actually see it. No, I'm just kidding.
movies you missed.
No, I really enjoyed it. I think I kind of agree that it almost doesn't really seem like an MCU movie up until that kind of like end battle. I think Marvel did a good job at not making this movie just like another, you know, post-Endgame, how are we figuring everything out, like that sort of movie, because I kind of expected like the first few sets of movies post-Endgame to be like that. But in all honesty, like, that hasn't really happened, and I like that because, you know, I do want to know, you know, how people dealt with it, but I also just want to kind of continue the actual stories, or like with Shang-Chi, learn new stories and, you know, meet new characters and, you know, see what they're doing and everything. So I like that this was, you know, Shang-Chi's origin story and not so focused on, you know, it's part of the MCU, so how are they dealing with the blip and everything? So I think they did a really good job with that. I think like the fighting and like the cinematography, I think, was done really well. To be fair, like, I'm basing my experience watching this, like, you know, seeing it in the 4DX, I kind of had that, you know, added experience of like movement and wind and all of that, so that definitely adds to my enjoyment of the film. But no, I think they did a great job. I really enjoyed it. This is definitely one that I want to watch again. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it, and definitely after the ending of it and the post-credit scenes, I am really excited to see what Marvel does with Shang-Chi in the future. I would love to see him in, like, possibly the next Doctor Strange, but who knows? But no, it was done really well. I think based off of other MCU films, like, this is definitely one of their top-tier movies, in my opinion, alongside movies like Black Panther, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, again, my opinion, Black Widow. So I definitely enjoyed it and will definitely be watching it again.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I really thought it was great. And yes, you know, I too saw it with the 4DX. So, you know, there's a bit of an experience there, but that's not why I liked it. The more I think about it, the more I liked it is because I love it when they take risks. And I'm not saying that this was a huge risk, but I like when they do things differently, different voices, different characters outside the norm. And when we started off, this train like 10 years ago, you're right, JT, it was all white male lead actors. And until recently, that has been the trend, white male leads. the idea that Marvel is trying to be more inclusive and global, and we have Miss Marvel coming up soon. Of course, well, I don't know what's going on with Black Panther. I have no idea what's going on there. But with Black Panther before, Black Widow is a bit of a strange one because she's dead. It is like, I mean, the more that they get into these different faces, different voices, the more interesting I think it gets. And I thought that he was great. I will say that I thought that he was great as a lead. He has the comedic chops to make it work. Like, he himself is very funny. I love Awkwafina. I think she's highly, highly underrated. I thought that he was just as good. I wanted to watch his story play out. Ironically, I will say that the thing that drove me nuts in this particular film was the white guy. It was Trevor Slattery. I am in the minority when I say I love him in Iron Man 3. I love Iron Man 3. Most people despise it, and it's basically because of what they do to the Mandarin. And yes, so you had to bring him back. I didn't expect him to carry a fluff ball with wings and be in the entire second half of the movie. Like, I was like, why do we need him in this giant epic battle at the finale of the film? The most appropriate thing was when he pretended to play dead. I'm like, yep, that, all right. That I'm okay with. Ooh, excuse me. That I'm okay with, but my goodness, his character, he was so unnecessary. I wanted to focus in on Awkwafina and, on Katie and Shang-Chi as their story unraveled. That to me was interesting. He was just sort of there. I'm like, why is he in this thing? And why is he still in this thing? I thought it was great. I thought it was great. It really is a beautiful film. I will say this, we've compared it to Black Panther. I think in importance, on the level of importance, I would compare it to Black Panther. The thing I liked about Black Panther that was better, one of the things I liked about Black Panther that was better, was that they showed you more of Wakanda. I didn't feel like they showed us very much of this particular realm, you know, not...
Talo.
Pardon?
Talo.
Talo. I didn't think we saw very much. We saw their beachfront property. You know, but that's not a criticism. I just thought that I really loved how Wakanda had... They showed you all the different areas of Wakanda. Which I would look forward to in a sequel. Maybe they would show us more in a future films. But in Black Panther, they didn't just bring you to the palace and then show you the field in front of it. Like, they took you to the area that was in the mountains. They took you to an area that was where they did their battle. Like, it was just a little bit more expansive. Mm-hmm. Which I liked. I liked that. The most we get from Talo is the scene where his mother and father meet, and the village next to the water. But I thought it was beautiful. It was a beautiful, beautiful film. And the storytelling was unique as well. I thought that was really interesting.
I think Black Panther also had a better villain.
Yes. Film.
Yeah. I mean, I knew, like, his whole character was all about kind of like, I guess, freeing the slaves kind of thing. like Killmonger, anti-oppression and like bringing basically, I guess, freeing black people in America from poverty.
Mm.
This was more, I don't know, I guess it didn't need to do that in this one, but I didn't like that the villain was just some monster at the end. I don't know. It felt too much, too quick. Especially since the monster didn't talk. It just, like, stole souls.
Oh, the giant flying monkey?
Yeah. Behind the door. I don't know.
Hey, that's his wife.
His wife? That was not his wife.
That, I don't know. I think they should have kept it as the dad, as the villain, the whole time. I don't know. I think it could have gone better story-wise. But well, it's whatever.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Let's talk about the villain there. Let's talk about his dad. Because I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. His dad struck me as very unique. What did you think of the way that his dad sort of played out in terms of his motivations, in terms of just the storyline there? What were your initial thoughts?
It's the toxic immigrant dad who I think wants the best for you, but in the way he sees it, I think. I guess the extreme example, he wants Shang-Chi to be, you know, the criminal overlord, like the boss, and take after him, right? But then if you compare it to, like, I guess, like, regular life, the example would be something like, oh, pick a job. This is my experience and, like, a lot of other first-generation, second-generation immigrants. But it's like, oh, pick a job that'll make you a lot of money, and that's what you got to do. And like, there's all this pressure and stuff like that, and it's like really toxic, the relationship. And then, you know, in the beginning, he was happy being like a bellhop, too, at that car place, him and Katie. But then, like, I don't know, it's there's something there, but I can't like say it. Like, they'll find the words to say, but everyone else was like against it. Like, all of their friends and like their parents were like ragging them on that. But they were happy. I don't know. I'm like straying away from the initial question, but I don't know. That's just something that occurred to me just now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right. I think you're right. They were sort of living the, well, were they happy? They seemed okay, but like, I guess he's not really, they seemed pretty satisfied with where they were.
That's what I remember. Like, they were like satisfied. Mm. They weren't like, oh man, my life sucks. It was everyone else. Like, it was her family saying, hey, you got to do something with your life. And then so was her friend at the restaurant. I don't know. They did obviously improve their lives, I think. But, like, there's something to be said there, I think, as well. But going back to the dad, I don't know. He's interesting. I think he should have been the villain, though. It was like the movie overall, like 90% of it was like a family movie, like family dynamics with the sister, the mom being dead, Shang-Chi, and then the dad and like the center of it all. But then it totally flipped to the monster at the end.
I thought that the monster, like, I don't know if I thought it totally flipped to the monster, because the monster was such a representation of what the dad wanted, you know, or maybe the monster was manipulating him rather, you know, to try and convince him that he was his mother and, you know, how that was. But yeah, that is it. I thought the relationship between him and the monster was particularly interesting in this, because they're not, his goal is different than any typical Marvel villain. That's what I thought was interesting. His goal is not world domination. His goal is power. I mean, let's be serious. Every villain, their goal is power. But in this one, his goal is simply just to get his wife back. Like, I really thought that he was using that as an excuse, and that we were going to find out that, of course, you know, he just wanted to, you know, tap into the power of the rings or something like that, that made him more powerful. But he seems to really just want his wife back. I think it's interesting. You tap into the family dynamic. There's something unique here. Other Marvel films have tapped into family dynamics, sure, but there's something unique in the way that this one played out. I'm still piecing it together myself. Mm-hmm. Daniel, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because, like, on one hand, like, you know, I'm like, oh, the dad was a villain. But on the other hand, like, at the end when, like, you know, realizing that he doesn't care about, like, his goal isn't, you know, to destroy Talo. It's not to rule the world. It's not to, you know, whatever. It literally is just to get his wife from behind this door. You know, you kind of feel bad for him because at least I did, because he also, you know, felt that he was the reason that she got killed, which in a sense, like, he kind of is, but isn't, because, you know, the people that killed the wife were the ones who killed her. He didn't. They made that choice to kill her.
I don't know if you remember, he blames it on Shang-Chi.
Blames what? Her death?
Yeah, he was mad though when he said it, but he said, yeah, "It. You watched your mom die and you did nothing."
Like, I think that was more him just kind of projecting, because I think he, like, I don't remember if it was Shang-Chi or if it was him who said something like after, or it might have been Shang-Chi actually, but like, because of what the dad was doing with this, you know, the 10 rings and whatever, the people who killed the wife, you know, if he wasn't part of this, like, crime organization thing, the wife wouldn't have died.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, you know, he definitely feels guilty about that, because he knows that if he had done what she said and left the criminal business or whatever, you know, she would probably still be alive, you know, and their lives would be completely different. So I think he definitely, like, feels guilty. And I think when he kind of, you know, said that to Shang-Chi, saying, you know, you just stood there and watched, I think that was just more of him projecting that guilt, not really him actually blaming Shang-Chi for it. But yeah, I don't know. Like, by the end of it, when he, like, dies, I feel kind of neutral. I'm not like, yeah, he, you know, he deserved to die. He was a villain. But I'm also not like, you know, how could they kill him off? I'm just kind of like neutral, because I don't know. I feel like they could have done more with him. And the flying, like, monkey thing, whatever, lizard monkey. I don't know, that monster thing too. Like, I do kind of feel like that last main fight scene at the end was really rushed, and I feel like there wasn't, like, a proper story that came with that, because I don't know, like, that soul sucker thing now just isn't an issue anymore. So I don't know, I just feel like it was kind of like a waste of a monster when, or a waste of that type of villain when they could have had, you know, more of a storyline with the dad or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought Tony Leung is a great actor. He doesn't have the charisma of Michael B. Jordan. So I'm comparing it to Black Panther again, which is a little unfair. But there was something about him. There was something about Killmonger that really made you want to believe in him. I did find in this one, the dad, I struggled to do that, but I really thought it was interesting. The fact that in the film, love strips him of his power every time. I thought that was really interesting. Every time he chooses love, he loses his power. And here's a guy who's supposed to have been alive for, I think it's like 5,000 years or something like that. And he meets his wife and he gives up the rings. She dies. He takes them up again. You know, he's fighting with Shang-Chi, when he realizes he's gone too far and Shang-Chi's about to die. He saves him. He gives up the rings to him again, and he saves his life. Every time he chooses love, he's stripped of his power. I did find that an interesting dynamic within the film, because he's trying to fill that void of his lost wife with as much power, whatever it looks like in this film, financial or also just the power of the Ten Rings, that he can possibly have. There's a void missing there because love has left a hole in him. And I think that is very interesting. I can nitpick the way that the final battle went and stuff. I thought the CGI was really good, but that's neither here nor there. But I did find that interesting. I did find that interesting about him. It felt like there was something there. There was something there. And I think, JT, I think you hit it on the head when you said there was an emphasis on family in this one, very much on family. The family dynamics were what drove the film in particular, which we haven't got a lot of in the MCU. I would say, Black Widow just came out. That was very much about family.
Yeah.
You haven't seen that one yet?
Yeah, I've been meaning to, but I haven't. I'll probably watch it this weekend.
It's a fun one. I mean, after I saw that, it was just a nice reminder that Marvel invests in movies. That's how I felt after it, because like we'd been getting at that point, that was the first movie coming out of the pandemic, first Marvel movie out of the pandemic. And you just realize, oh, okay. Like this one's big again, you know, it's not just a TV show. You can tell the difference. Of course, Shang-Chi, you know, is big as well, but that was the first one we saw. I am interested in this idea. We talked a little bit about it, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on the idea of the generational aspect of it. JT, you spoke really well about first and second generation immigrants or minorities or families. I'd love to hear too, just this idea of, what is it for you guys as well, you know, being younger, this idea of moving forward, charting your own path? Is that a challenge? Is it a challenge for you, but how do you see that playing out within the film?
Throughout the whole thing, he's like rejecting everything his dad stood for, his entire past. Like he even changes his name to a white sounding name, totally different from his original ethnic name. And he, there's this theme throughout the film where he's like rejecting his past, right? And it's not till he goes back to his mom's hometown and talks to his aunt that he like finally really acknowledges himself. Like even the aunt says, like, you know, you are a result of everyone who came before you. I think it's really, my guess, it's saying to the audience who are born in America or born in like an English white speaking country, like that are Asian or even any immigrant, like don't, you know, you don't have to reject your culture or your past or your family ties. And it is a part of you. That's what I think, at least. But yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Daniel, what do you think?
I think coming from like my stand, not stand, I guess, I don't know, standpoint, like, it seems like, I mean, obviously, Shang-Chi's dad and the mom, like, their families are completely different when it comes to, like, their values and stuff like that, because, you know, his dad is very much, you know, I want you to learn how to fight and be the best, you know, fighter, period. Like, that's it. This is what I want you to do, so this is what you're going to do. But when we, you know, learn, we don't learn much about his mom, but I guess more from his aunt and the, like, Ta Lo community, they seem a lot more open to like expressing what you want to do and who you are rather than, you know, sticking to, you know, this is what I'm being taught, so this is what I have to do. And I mean, it shows up in the movie, like, Shang-Chi obviously hated what his dad was, you know, teaching him to do, like, you know, to grow up to, you know, not even have a choice if you want to be a super assassin, just, you know, being trained and told this is what you're going to do. You know, I've trained you your whole life, you have to do it, whatever. You know, that's obviously not what he wanted to do. So much so that when he's given the chance to leave, although it's supposed to be on a mission, he doesn't come back. He changes his name. He moves to America and, you know, pretty much like cuts that off from his life and, you know, completely leaves that all behind. But when he goes into Ta Lo and then starts learning about it, like, you can see that that's something that he's like, you know what? This is what I want to learn about and what I want to be a part of. And I think that having that choice now of, you know, he can be in San Francisco doing valet and not feeling that that's not what he's supposed to be doing because, you know, oh, my dad raised me to be an assassin. Like, I feel like he feels much more included in the Ta Lo community than what he felt with at like his dad's, I think they called it a compound. And I think that that's something, like, again, from my experience, like, I am a white male. I personally, like, I didn't grow up with, like, my parents being like, oh, you know, you have to have, you know, a high-paying job. You have to be, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, a businessman. Like, I never grew up like that. Like, my mom especially was always like, do what you want to do, what you like doing, what you feel included in, what makes you happy. That's what, you know, that's what you should be doing when you're older. But I know, like, a lot of, like, people that I'm close to, a lot of my friends who are from different cultures have, like, you know, feel differently, feel like, you know, they have to follow a certain path that their parents have either laid out or expect them to do because they don't want to, you know, disappoint or, you know, feel that kind of like, you know, I'm letting my parents down, which I feel like that, like, that kind of gets brought up more a bit with Katie. Like, they have that full on conversation, like, at breakfast, where her mom's like, I think she says, like, you have like a music degree from Berkeley and you spend your life parking cars or something like that. And she's like, well, I like parking cars, you know. And then again, like with Shang-Chi, his father raised him, you know, teaching him to be an assassin. That's not what he wants to do. So you can definitely see that there's, you know, that sort of disconnect between feeling, you know, what do I want to do? What am I happy doing? What am I comfortable doing? Versus what am I being told I have to do? But by the end of the movie, like, it seems like Shang-Chi and Katie are very much in that space where they're like, yeah, I can do what I'm comfortable, what I'm happy doing. And they don't feel, at least they don't seem to feel as bad about it, I guess.
With Shang-Chi, his storyline, I think, ends up veering a little bit more away. I think you guys hit it on the head when you say he ran away. He legitimately is so damaged by his childhood. He doesn't just have to chart his own path. He's trying to create a whole new life. And I think it's very interesting that his storyline sort of takes the effect of coming to making peace with who you are. And that's part of who you are. That I found very interesting, you know, as opposed, like, he doesn't have to be like his dad, but it is part of his story. In that, in some ways I could relate to, not with my parents. Not with my parents per se, but with other things I've had to make peace with the fact that, yeah, that's part of my story. No matter how much I wish it wasn't, whether it's things I've done or things that have been done to me, and you just sort of been, it's very painful. But having to make peace with the fact that that's part of who you are, I thought was really interesting. But this idea too of stepping into your own life, that's got to be much, much more difficult too, with the added cultural layer, as you said, like, you know, this idea of parents pressuring and saying, this is who we have determined you should be. That's got to be really difficult, especially now. Like, you guys are younger than me. You guys are in that stage where you're starting to step forward, you know, and try and figure out who you are. I don't know if you've got 10 powerful bracelets, but you do.
Billy bands.
but this idea of figuring out, I did go through I've gone through it several times in my life, this idea of trying to figure out who I am and taking that step out. And differentiate myself and figure out who God has made me to be. That's a challenging time of life. It's a very challenging time. And I could relate to it on that level, There's something ubiquitous about that idea. Obviously, that's not the cultural difference or cultural understanding, but there is something to be said there that I could relate to.
I kind of wish they used Katie more. Mm. Like obviously with, you know, the trailers and the marketing for this movie, it seemed like Awkwafina's would play a bigger role, I guess more so in like by the end. Like, you know, she was obviously in it a lot. Like, you know, she was, I guess, with Shang-Chi like the whole time. But when she actually gets to Ta Lo and starts learning about like learning how to do archery and everything, I thought they just would have used her more. Like she just kind of got like that one shot. To be fair, it was, you know, the most important shot she could get, and, you know, hitting that thing's Adam's apple. But like, I feel like, you know, they could have had her do more and just, you know, I don't know, especially going forward, knowing that she's going to be like in the MCU and be this, I guess, superhero now. I'm just kind of like, well, all that I know of her is that she sometimes has a good shot. I wish they just used her more and, you know, I don't know. I just feel like at the end, they kind of forgot about her a bit. And they were kind of like, oh, do you know what? We need the throat to be slit. Oh, she's been standing there the whole time. Have her, you know, do the shot. Mm. I don't know. I just feel like they could have used her more. And I wanted her character to be, you know, have more of a fight than just one shot, I guess.
She was very comic relief-y. She plays the same character a lot of the times is what I noticed too. So I think maybe that's something that made it her character like that, I guess. Because it felt like, if you've seen Crazy Rich Asians, it felt like literally the same character. So I think that's what we're going for. I don't know.
That's her thing. That's her thing.
But no, it would have been nice to see her come into light as well a bit more. I mean, it was a good shot. She got like the one money shot. And then the car scene was pretty good too.
Is it bad that I hated that? That I didn't like.
That she got the shot?
Yeah.
Because it was like too gimmick or corny. Like, oh, she's going to hit it, right?
Well, yeah. It was like she trained for an hour. And then she managed to hit a pinpoint on a dragon. And see that, I mean, it all tied into this idea of taking, like they say earlier on, you got to take your shot. And it's about life. But like this thing where all of a sudden it's like, oh, she's not ready to shoot the arrow. Oh, okay. It's someone's got to, oh, it's gotta be her. Oh, she did it. And I went, oh. Because I loved her in the movie. I thought she was great.
I agree. You saw the shot coming, right? There was no character.
Yeah. It was almost not dramatic because of it was so blatantly obvious that it was gonna play out that way.
Maybe they should have made her miss it.
And she fails.
And then like some people die and she watches. And then she has to do another shot or something. Or I don't know.
Ironically, I would have felt better about that. Because all of a sudden she hits this pinpoint shot from, you know, 100 meters away or however far along she was. And
okay, I know what could fix it. She misses the shot. A bunch of people die. She has to go to get the arrow that she missed, climb up to the dragon's throat and then stab it with her bare hands.
Yeah, that would be more, that would make more sense, wouldn't it? You know what I liked though? What I really liked is that she wasn't there just to prop him up as a girlfriend.
Yes.
Now, it's still his movie. It's still his movie, very much his movie. But they tried to give her a storyline so that she wasn't just the girlfriend.
Yeah.
We didn't even date at the end.
No. No. I'm like, this is great. That may be the first time in an MCU movie that I've seen where a male and female character are together the entire time and nothing romantic happens between them.
Yeah, maybe. Spider-Man 1? Oh, wait.
No, he has a girlfriend the whole time.
I was thinking of MJ. But then...
The Winter Soldier.
That's a different type of relationship.
Yeah, Peggy's best.
Oh, you're talking about Peggy? I was talking about Bucky and Cap, but anyway.
Okay. Oh, I was thinking Nat and Cap.
Oh, and Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
See, Marvel doesn't really understand how to write women. And I'm not saying I do. I'm not so saying weird. I do. But no, in all seriousness, like Black Widow, I felt like they fully fleshed out her character. I had a lot of fun podcasting on that one with the ladies with there. And because I felt like she was fully fleshed out. And I don't think she had been. Like, Black Widow has never been fully fleshed out in a movie. She's always tied to another member of the Avengers romantically every single time she shows up. Doesn't matter if it's Hulk, Cap, Iron Man, you know, they always tie her with somebody.
Yeah.
And this was the, like, they were just really close. Katie's just his best friend.
I do hope they keep it like that. I hope they just stay like really close friends.
I'm okay if they get romantic. I'm not okay if she loses a character. Like, she loses a character arc because of it. Like a Doctor Strange, which I love. Doctor Strange is like seriously one of my favorite MCU movies. Like it truly is. Her character, forgive me. I can't remember. Rachel McAdams' character is just there to prop him up. That's it.
Yeah.
Now maybe in future films, maybe they give her a storyline, but it's very clear she's there as arm candy. Mm-hmm. And I did not get that sense with Awkwafina. I just didn't like, I just thought the archery thing was cheesy. They tried to give her a story that showed her strength and her courage. And it was just like, now you're the only one that can hit the shot. And she hits the shot on her first try. Because, yeah. And I was like, okay.
I even think like, just in that scene, have her miss the first time, miss the second time, and maybe just show her like, in a bit of distress and, you know, maybe even having to like prop herself up and, you know, just kind of be like, you know, take a second, breathe. You got this, you know, show her that it's not just, oh, I can make it in one shot. Like,
yes.
You know, give her that bit of humanity and, you know, eventually she does hit it. But okay, not just on the first shot when she's like, you know, barely looking at the monster. Like,
okay, here's how they could have done it way better.
No.
Okay, so she hits the arrow and it misses. It bounces off the roof of one of the houses and then bounces off the mountain and then off the glass.
Oh my.
Wow. Wow.
It's the dragon through the throat, and then it goes back to her, like, right when she took the shot, and she did it behind the head, blindfolded.
With her feet.
Yes.
Well, I think what we all want in a movie about magic bracelets and dragons is realism. And
obviously.
I think that's really what we're all looking for, isn't it?
When she looks at the camera and says... Your spot is mine, Hawkeye.
Right, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she winks at the camera.
Yeah.
You know, that's, yeah, that would have totally helped. No, I really liked what they did with her character. It was just that moment. I didn't think they scripted it very well. I was like, okay. But yeah. Yeah, but I did think it was fun. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know what I loved was how important they made them in the MCU so quickly. I thought that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That final scene where they're all standing around, like they kicked him up to Avengers level extremely quickly. And I really liked that. I thought that was actually really impressive.
I thought they were going to mug him at the end for the rings.
You thought they
were, really? They came out of nowhere. He's like, yo, bring the rings. I'm like, oh, are they going to steal it?
Why would Wong mug him?
Well, I mean, it did all that crazy stuff. And then he's like, you know, bring the rings. And I'm like, oh, are they just going to take it from him? Because he doesn't have it in the comics either. So I'm like, maybe this is how they get rid of them.
Dang. I think we're underestimating, too. The best joke in the movie is actually from Captain Marvel.
Oh.
Because whenever she's on it, she's like Pokeroo. She always has to run. Has anybody else noticed this? Every single movie she's in, she goes, you know what? I gotta go, but I'll see you later.
Get my number from this guy.
That's her thing. I guess it's her thing. She's a busy lady. She's gotta go.
Got some dishes to wash.
Okay.
Kidding.
Well, guys, this has been fun, but we should screen it or skip it.
Screen it or skip it.
Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings, screen it or skip it.
Screen it.
Definitely screen it.
Yeah, it is for me. Marvel movies often are, I'm not going to lie. I really enjoy them. Some are better than others. I thought this was one of the better ones. I want to see it again to validate that. But no, I thought it was really good. I thought it was really good. I love him and I love her. I thought they've really built us into something that could be very, very interesting down the road.
Okay. Oh, did you hear the theory about the rings? It's not a crazy theory. It's leading to the Eternals, because there's 10 Eternals, and then there's 10 rings, and then the rings in the end credit scene were calling someone, and then also the rings give you eternal life. So the theory is that it belonged to them.
Interesting.
That it leads directly to the Eternals movie coming out.
I am very much looking forward to the Eternals. I think the Eternals is going to be underrated. You know, everybody's excited about Spider-Man and all that stuff. I get it. But I think Eternals could be the best one this year. I think there's potential.
Really?
There. Yeah, I think there's some real potential there. And the story they want to tell is going to be, I think it's going to be a lot more important than people realize, because they're so excited to see what the craziness of the new Spider-Man movie. I think people are looking past the Eternals too quickly. It's going to be really interesting. Guys, thank you so much. This has been fun. Looking forward to chatting with you guys again, but thank you guys so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. We will be back next week, and you can find us wherever podcasts are available. Or at least we're trying to do that. Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, so much more. We are trying to get these up on YouTube as well. for the first time, trying to be consistent with YouTube as well. So you can look for us there. And as always, if you go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More, which are small group questions that you can have to help get the conversation started where you are. So guys, thank you so much. I love chatting with you. I really appreciate your insight. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.